Misha here. If you enjoy our episodes on career pathways in healthcare or the STEM field at large, then I have the perfect podcast recommendation for you, Raising Health. Previously called Bio Eats World, Raising Health comes from leading venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz, the same team behind the acclaimed A16Z podcast. Each episode, Raising Health dives deep into the heart of healthcare, biotech, and AI with venture capital investors and A16Z general partners. Along the way, they explore the real challenges and opportunities in health and biotech entrepreneurship. So whether you're interested in building a new digital healthcare company or your company is advancing a new, novel medicine, Raising Health sheds light on some of the opportunities and obstacles along the founder's journey. Not to mention, you'll hear raw insights, actionable advice from notable guests like Omada CEO and co-founder Sean Duffy, and AI expert and in situ CEO Daphne Koller. Don't miss out. Follow Raising Health on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and tell them I sent you.
A science story, huh?
NYU scientist, they
I felt it.
It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Story Collider, where we bring you true personal stories about science. I'm your host, Erin Barker, and today I'm joined by two other hosts of Story Collider. First, we have Gastor Almonte. Gastor is a senior producer at Story Collider and an award-winning comedian, whom you may have seen on Comedy Central or PBS's Stories from the Stage. Gastor is the host of our monthly online Story Slams.
What's up, y'all?
And also with us is the wonderful Paula Croxon. Paula is also a senior producer at Story Collider, as well as a neuroscientist and science communicator and rock flautist, among many other things. Paula has been the host of our monthly main stage online live shows.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks for joining me today, Gastor and Paula. Gastor and Paula are joining me because we're highlighting two stories from our online shows over the past year today. And I thought, who better to help me introduce them than the hosts of these shows themselves? Gastor and Paula, what has it been like to host these shows over the past year during COVID-19?
I've really enjoyed just the added level of intimacy that's come with these shows. There is something different about the performances, just because they're coming from, you know, people being in this new space where they're kind of separated. And it is a very different feel from the live show. Even the audience's responses, I think there's something to the fact that we can't audibly hear them. And so they're typing out more of their thoughts and feelings into the chat. I've just been really impressed with the level of depth that we're getting from these stories.
Totally. I totally agree. Paula, what do you think?
Yeah, I really feel that as well. I've loved reading the 10-word stories that audience members have been sharing and just like reading those responses to the stories. And I don't know if we can ever have a real life version of emojis, but like there's a strong emoji game. And I also love the way the storytellers show up for each other and, you know, are responding because they can see each other on screen. And I sort of feel like we've created this really amazing community of storytellers over the past year.
Totally. And it's a community made up of people all over the world. And it's really exciting to see people who have never been able to come to our shows before get to come because we're online. So that's one nice thing of this past year. I also will say when we go back to in-person shows, I think I am going to miss being able to type my thoughts to everyone during the stories. I'm going to become one of those obnoxious show talkers or something like that. I'm a little worried about it. So the first story we're going to share with y'all today is one of the winning stories from one of our monthly Science Story Slams. Gastor, do you want to share a little bit about our online Story Slams and what goes down, why they're so much fun?
Yeah, it's just been a really fun way for us to incorporate more of the community. You know, normally with our shows, they're curated. Especially the live shows, you know, it's something that we plan for an event or a theme. The slams have kind of been a chance for us to, you know, kind of open the doors and let anyone who's been a fan of us, you know, who's heard the podcast for years, if they've had a story that they've wanted to share, regardless of where they are, put your name in a hat. It could be you tonight, you know? So Just getting those stories from people that have been longtime listeners, people that have taken part in the workshop and just went from I've never told the story to telling a story. We get all of that at any given point on any night. Getting to see people share something of themselves that they haven't had a chance to has been truly awesome.
I love it. It's such a fun energy. And I love seeing the stories that people come up with. I'm just dazzled every month.
Yeah, I dig it.
So without any further ado, this first story is from Johanna Goyes Vallejos. It's the winning story from our February online science story slam on the theme of love. And it was later recorded at her home in Missouri last April.
Finishing my PhD was like pushing a huge rock up a steep mountain to ultimately just push it off the cliff. I had no postdoc waiting, and because I'm an alien, the term that affectionately is used by the government to refer to international students, I knew that once the graduate school finalized the paperwork, I will have 30 days to uproot my life of this last 6 years and leave the U.S. I had successfully defended my dissertation, yet I did not feel successful. And whenever people asked me, what's next? I would start sobbing uncontrollably. And as a result, I started avoiding people, and I'm pretty sure people started avoiding me. Around that time, my friend Justin, who I met in grad school, he had gone on to become a high school teacher in New York City. And he called me and asked me if I would like to speak in his science class. It'll be good for them to meet a real scientist, he said. But am I a real scientist? In any case, I had nothing better to do, and I said yes. To prepare for my visit, I told him to ask the students to write in a piece of paper what they think a scientist is. Then we put together their responses in a word cloud. The words lab coat, white, all, Bill Nye, stuck out like a fly in a glass of milk. The day of, Justin and I make it to the school, and I hide in the prep room while students trickle into the classroom. As I see them coming in, talking about the things you talk about in ninth grade, it hit me. Almost all the students were, or at least looked, Hispanic. Their teachers, mostly white. Justin starts introducing me without making any references that may give away my gender or ethnicity. And then I made my grand entrance. 5'0", Latina, Dr. Goyes Vallejos. My goal was to get them excited about research, about science, so I spent hours preparing slides with images of cool amphibians and reptiles. I tell them that I'm a herpetologist and I study frog behavior. I tell them about my journey, coming from the Andes of Colombia to the United States to pursue a PhD. I talk about my discoveries, my experiences across the world, and all the places my research has taken me. As I speak, I see the images of my travels, my study organisms, my science. It almost feels like I put together a tribute to my research, to myself. Will I be able to continue doing research? Will I get to see my frogs again? Will I have to give it up so I can pay the bills? As I flip through the slides, these feelings are creeping inside of me. And then I have to snap out of it and have to end my talk with the usual, any questions? The students splayed out on their seats seem unamused. I wait for a few minutes that feel like an eternity, and then I hear it. How much money do you make? They could have asked anything about frogs, and I almost certainly would have known the answer. But this question, I'm not sure if I can answer, or at least not honestly, if the goal is to get them interested in a career in science. I stand up tall and I said what I've been telling myself and my family for years. I didn't get into science because I wanted to be a millionaire. I got into science because I love research, and I live well, and I have everything I need. And that was the truth, or at least partially, knowing that in just a couple of weeks, my paycheck would stop coming altogether. As I answer, I was also having flashbacks of my parents. You want to be a biologist? You will starve to death, they say. Were they right, after all? Another question yanks me back to the classroom. But how do you get the money for the research and all that stuff? I gather my thoughts and I say, research is funded through grants and fellowships that you can apply for. But before I can add another sentence, another student interjects and says, yeah, but you gotta be real smart for that. And again, I feel the wind knocked out of my sails. The truth of the matter is that I sucked at getting grants, and throughout my PhD, I never got any of the fancy fellowships. So maybe the student is right. At this moment, I feel tiny, and I'm not sure what to say or do. I take a deep breath and I say, listen, in life, there are two kinds of people, those who are smart and those who work hard. And we, Latinos, for better or worse, are no quitters. You know what we are? We are resilient, and that is our superpower. If Abuelita can wake up every morning and cook food for the whole family and some more without fail, then we can crack open a book and study hard, if that is what you want. As I said this, I can feel how my breathing is fast and my voice is trembling and my eyes are welling up. I snap out of it, and as I put myself together, I see on the back of the room two girls with tears rolling down their eyes. I can feel the emotions are running high, and so does Justin. So he steps in to thank me for my visit and joins the students in a round of applause that sounds muffled in my head. I go into the prep room while he dismisses the class with my heart still pounding in my chest. I'm pushing the knot in my throat down when I feel a tap on my shoulder. And it's one of the girls from the class, and she said to me, my father does not want me to be a veterinarian because I won't make any money. But I'm going to tell him that I don't care and that I'm going to become a veterinarian and take care of animals. I smile and tell her that it sounds like a good plan. On my drive back, I ponder if me telling these kids to chase their dreams was the responsible thing to do. After all, I chased mine and now I'm stuck. Later that night, I open my computer and I see an email with the subject line, thank you. Justin asked the students to write again on a piece of paper what they think a scientist is, and they put together another word cloud. The word lab coat was gone, and so was Bill Nye. And the words young, Latino, Hispanic showed up in this new, beautiful version. But the most striking word right there in bright red in the middle of it all was person. Staring at the screen, I got teary-eyed and my heart feels heavy. I may not be the most successful and certainly not the smartest scientist out there, but if telling my story opens a world of possibilities and clears a path for others so they can be whatever they want to be, I'll take it.
That was Johanna Goyes-Vallejos. Johanna is a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Missouri. She was born and raised in the mountains of Colombia, South America, where she obtained her undergraduate degree in biology. Later, she moved to the U.S. to pursue a PhD in ecology and evolutionary biology. In a nutshell, she studies how frogs attract each other so they can make babies, how they then make the babies, and how they take care of the babies. Gestor, what was it like hearing Johanna's story at the SLAM?
I really connected with this story just for, you know, various reasons, right? Like, you know, the vulnerability that she shows, you know, with both discussing like her feelings of how she felt when she decided to pursue this and seeing how a community of people that look like her and, you know, essentially are going to have to make the tough choices in their near future about what they're going to pursue and balancing dreams versus what's realistic and having that pressure of I'm an example of this, but I also don't know if I'm being responsible in how I answer this in a particular way. I think seeing her kind of juggle that was really incredible to me. And also just another great example of how, like, when you help people, those people help you back in a weird way, you know, with the response of her student kind of coming to her and almost her going to her to thank her ends up reassuring her that she's going in the right way. I just thought all of that was awesome. And, you know, I just love the fact that we're getting a chance to hear from more and more voices, you know. So, I was super thankful. Being a Latino host, we had an awesome story from a Latino scientist. So I got to, you know, after the show, go upstairs and tell my daughter about this story. So Just a lot about this has been great. So I truly appreciated this.
Oh, that's so awesome, Gastor. Johanna was one of my workshop students in the advanced workshop, so I admit I'm pretty partial to the story. She developed it with us in class.
Yeah, she got chops. I was really, really excited about this. Really, my only issue is that this inspired my son to make a stronger push for us to buy fungi. So now I have like fungi growing in my living room, which is like great for his science interests. Doesn't aesthetically match the rest of the sofa and love seat collection we have. But yeah, he's happy. So we're doing well.
Oh, I thought you were going to say frogs. I was worried you were getting a bunch of frogs now.
He's like, nah, like I want to do science stuff too. So you said the science lady. So yeah, here we are.
Be careful what you wish for when it comes to your kids getting into science, I guess.
When I was in school, I had a mold project that was going on in my home. And my parents were surprisingly supportive of it.
Yeah, I'm into it. Like, I had no arguments. He was like, you told me and Michaela about the frog lady and mom has all these plants. You know, I like science. I want to grow fungi. And I was like, all right. So we got fungi now. So we just have like fungi all over my living room. So yeah. Thanks, Joanna.
Awesome. Next, we're going to hear a story from one of our monthly main stage shows. Paula, do you want to say a little bit about those shows?
Yeah. So these shows have really been a ray of light for me during the whole pandemic, really. One thing that's been really fun about them is that in the past with a sort of in-person show, I would produce the stories and host. But this time I actually don't hear the stories until I'm on stage hosting. And I really love being able to react to them in real time. Sometimes that results in a strong reaction, but it's real. And I think hopefully the audience I can't see are reacting along with me. So that's been really cool. And I think all of the storytellers who do this are just really brave and have really brought their best selves to the stage. And it's such an honor to kind of be led into someone's home like that and have them share their story with us.
Paula, like many of us at Story Collider, is a crier. So you can see that on display at our main stage shows, everybody.
You also can see such nuggets of gold as me singing to my cats.
Check it out every month, storyglider.org. So our next story that we're going to share with you from one of our main stage shows is from Sam Long. It was recorded at his home in Colorado in December after he originally shared his story in our November 2020 main stage show on the theme, The Real Me.
When I was 8 years old, I thought my mom was the smartest, most amazing person in the world. It was an honor anytime she asked me for help, whether it was folding sheets together, or getting dinner ready, or helping her with work. Yes, she said with a smile, you can help me with my science work. And so I leapt up onto her queen-size bed, and she handed me a sheet of paper covered with these hundreds of thin, wavy lines, and they were in red, blue, green, and black ink. Above each wave's peak was a capital letter, which my mom asked me to read out loud. A-A-C-T-T, C-G-T-A-A, G-G-A-T-C. I lay across the bed, propped up on my elbows, reading out sequence after sequence. Mom sat her petite frame on an oversized office chair, and she compared my letters to the ones on her paper. If they were different, she would mark it down. I asked, Mom, why are there only four letters here? What is this? And Mom looked up and pushed back her long, fine hair. She said, this is DNA. The strands of DNA contain the instructions for life, for making all living things. And I thought, wow, four letters only for making every living thing, including me? Mom explained that a machine used the waves to read the DNA code, but it made some mistakes, so we had to check it. By helping her, I was helping scientists understand more about biology. It wasn't just mother-daughter time, it was like a job. I was helping with science. As early as I understood the idea of a family, I understood that science was at the core of my family. My mom and dad had both studied biology at Sichuan University in China. As the top students in their class, they were able to continue their training in the United States. Here they became parents to twin girls, my sister and me. My dad studied bacteria, the tiniest of life, but when we were just babies, he died in a car accident. My mom studied plants and later yeast, and every time we moved to a new city, it was because she got a new job there. My stepdad had been a science teacher, but he was training for a new career, making computer programs for science research. One day I was helping prepare vegetables for dinner. My mom gave me a bowl of long green beans, and I sat at the table, snapping them into bite-sized pieces, removing the thick string that wasn't digestible. As I repeated this task, a question popped into my head, so I asked it. Mom, can people change their names? Can you change if you're a boy or a girl? Mom stayed facing toward the kitchen sink, acting hesitant. Was she unsure of the answer, or unsure of why I was asking? She eventually just said, "No, not really," and that was it. By the time I was a junior in high school, I had found the answer on my own, and I knew why I had been asking. I was a boy. Yes, you can become a boy. The realization of who I had been all along was joyous, but I kept that joy inside. I transitioned gradually, first by cutting my hair, going by a new name, and wearing the clothes that I liked. My mom wanted to shut this down immediately. She said to me, "I gave birth to you. I know you are a girl." She said, "You can't change nature. Trust me, I'm a scientist." I tried to give Mom more time to accept me as Sam. I focused on keeping my grades up. My favorite class was biology with Mr. Coulter, where every day I got closer to fully understanding those A's, T's, C's, and G's that I had been reading since I was 8. In the winter of junior year, we learned about genetics and reproduction. I learned that XX chromosomes were for women and XY were for men, except me. I learned that a zygote is formed by the union between an egg cell, always made by women, and a sperm cell, always made by men, except me. With every gross generalization that we spoke or read, I felt like everyone was looking at me and sensing that I didn't belong. With every sweeping statement that left me behind, making me acutely aware that I wasn't normal, I would say to myself, "Except me." Mr. Coulter may not have noticed my anxiety with genetics, but he saw my aptitude and he signed me up for the National Biology Competition in the spring. This was a written exam for high schoolers with the top prize of a college scholarship to study biology. The exam would test us on some complex topics that we hadn't learned yet in class, which I loved to reason through and figure out for the first time. In the weeks before the exam, I studied hard because I loved science, and I wanted to make my mom proud. When the scores came back, I had done the best out of all the juniors in my school. Mr. Coulter said, "You know, you should definitely take the exam again when you're a senior. You could probably land that scholarship." So that evening at dinner, I mentioned this to my mom, and she seemed happy about it. She asked me what was on the exam, and we discussed a few of the topics. I felt like a real child of science, talking shop with my mom. It was a lot better than having my mom grill me over my choice to cut my hair. By the spring of my senior year, I learned much more about biology, and I was confident I could ace this exam, but I didn't mention it to my mom. Our relationship had grown cold and hostile. She stopped asking me to help with dinner, and we ate dinner in silence. At one point, she said, "If you're not my daughter, you're not a part of this family." I was hurt, but I didn't have time to grieve. I had to make an exit plan. I was going to turn 18 on April 30th. I could legally change my name, graduate, and then move out on my own. I planned to work minimum wage for a few years to get financially independent, then go to college. It would be the long way to college, but it would be my way. I had this all sorted out except one thing. I needed a notary to sign the name change forms. So I thought of my friend Melissa, whose mom was a lawyer, and Melissa's mom agreed to be my notary. She said we could walk over to her house, just down the street from school, during lunch to get the papers signed. We set the earliest possible date to do this, my birthday, April 30th. And I couldn't wait. I would be getting the gift of a lifetime, legal recognition of who I was. But I screwed up. It was the same day as the biology exam. Same day, same time, same lunch hour. I thought about staying for the exam and just going on a later day to get the paper signed. That way I could get a great score and probably win a scholarship to major in biology, this fascinating science that I was born to study. That might even make my mom smile again. It had been so long since she really smiled. But this would mean delaying my name change, delaying it again when I had already been waiting years. I thought about skipping the exam or leaving early. That way I could get my name change filed and it would probably go through by the last day of school. I would leave high school and walk out into the world as Sam Long, the man and the adult. I wanted badly to be my own man, with a driver's license and a job, and I even wanted that dinky little plastic employee name tag as long as it read Sam. Maybe I wanted all this even more than I wanted to be a part of my family, or even more than I wanted to be a scientist. I couldn't decide what to do. On April 30th, at lunch hour, I still couldn't decide. I was sitting hunched at a desk among 30 other students working on this national biology exam. It was 12:10 p.m., and I had blown through all the questions in just the first 20 minutes. I looked at the clock and I thought, I could leave now. I could turn in my exam and leave. Then I looked down at my answer sheet. For sure, I had missed a few questions by going so fast. This wasn't like me. A child of science would take this seriously and stay and check every answer, do what it takes to be the number one student, just like my mom was. I picked up my pencil and I started checking answers. The first question was something about photosynthesis. But then I thought, what am I doing? Trying to get a better score? What good is that going to do? Get me a scholarship? Why would I want a scholarship where the name inscribed is not my name? What good is it going to do? Do I really think a perfect score is going to be enough to make my mom love me again? Do I even want my mom's love when she has hurt me so badly? I am 18 today, and it's time for me. But maybe I could stay for 5 more minutes, maybe 10, and still have enough time to go see the lawyer. Could I risk it? What's an appropriate amount of time to allocate to a national science competition versus the legal recognition of my own identity? I'm running out of time. I need to go with my gut. I'm not my mother's daughter. I am my own man. At 12:15 p.m., I packed up my pencils and I raised my hand for Mr. Coulter to collect my exam. My hand shook in the air and my heart sounded like galloping horses. It took all of my conviction to keep my hand raised up, but I did. Mr. Coulter seemed surprised I was already done. He knew nothing of my dilemma. He was probably thinking, well, there goes your scholarship. But then I stood up, and I could feel my blood running through me. I walked with such momentum through the door, down the hall, through the double doors, and into the sunlight. I knew what I was doing, and I knew who I was.
That was Sam Long. Sam is a Chinese-American Canadian trans man and a high school science teacher. He is co-founder of genderinclusivebiology.com and the Colorado Transgender Nonbinary Educators Network. Paula, what do you think it was about this story?
I think Gusto already used this word, so at the risk of overusing it, I think the vulnerability that Sam shows in this story is just really beautiful. It's a brave story. It's not an easy thing to talk about. And it's like sharing some of those difficult moments with his mom in particular, I think it's just really resonates. We all have the experience of having those kind of conflicts, maybe not exactly the same. I also think that many of us who are scientists have the experience of kind of having to feeling like we have to choose between science and something else. And that comes across with a lot of urgency in this story. And I think Sam just does such a good job of conveying that. And the other thing I think that really resonated with people that's really great about this story is that it doesn't have a nice, neat, tidy ending. It's so real. The ending is just how it was. It leaves us with more questions. I remember having a lot of questions for Sam at the end of the show. It leaves us with a lot more questions than answers. But I think that that's how life is. And that kind of just that realness of the story just kind of really struck a chord with people.
The Story Collider is so grateful to Johanna and Sam for sharing their stories. The Story Collider is also very grateful for the support of Science Sandbox, a Simons Foundation initiative dedicated to engaging everyone with the process of science. This podcast is produced by me, Erin Barker, with assistance from Story Collider's Deputy Director Nissa Greenberg and Senior Podcast Editor Jun Chen. Special thanks goes out to Story Collider's board, our operations manager, Lindsay Cooper, and our interim executive director, Leslie Griesbach-Schultz, without whom none of this would be possible. And of course, a huge thanks to Gastor Almonte and Paula Croxon for joining me on the podcast today, as well as to senior producer, Misha Gajewski, for all of her help, including recording Johanna's story for us. Our theme music, of course, is by Ghost. We'll be back next week with another special episode in celebration of our 11th anniversary. Don't forget, you can join us on June 3rd at our first annual Proton Prom fundraiser, which will be hosted by, guess who? Gastor Almonte.
That's it, that's me.
With an after party hosted by, guess who? Paula Croxon.
Yes.
We would all three love to see you there.
Big facts.
Definitely.
Big facts.
Thanks for listening.